From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 49 with guest Michael Manos, recorded March 10th, 2008. Run As Radio is brought to you each week by Plop Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, you're listening to Run As Radio, and I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey there, Richard. How are you today?
Things are good, man, and I'm plowing away at all the work we need to do around TechEd US. Of course, I'm stuck there for both weeks. I'm going to do the dev week for .NET Rocks and the IT week with you for Run As Radio.
Right.
And we've got a huge stage where we're going to be doing presentations pretty much the whole conference, so I have an opportunity to put together a whole bunch of panel discussions.
Yeah, you know, there's for my money, going to a conference where you, if you can get and listen to one smart person talking, that's great. But when you can get a slew of smart people all in one place having a conversation about really cool leading edge stuff, that's where you really get the most bang for the buck a lot of the time. So I'm pretty excited about that, the opportunity to bring some real thought leaders together and see what they have to say.
So they're calling the area now TechEd Online. Last year it was called Virtual TechEd, but now it's called TechEd Online. And if you've got any ideas for a panel discussion or folks you'd like to see up on stage with us to talk about IT-related topics, send us an email, info@runasradio.com. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Michael Manos is a seasoned information systems management executive with over 15 years of industry experience and technical certifications. His strong background in IT technology platforms combined with his telecommunications and network and service management has resulted in his work being recognized by IT industry publications and leading analyst firms, including the Gartner Group and the Meta Group. In his current role, Michael is responsible for the worldwide operations and construction efforts of all internet and enterprise data centers for Microsoft Corporation. In addition, for his responsibility for the ongoing administrative and technical support of servers, network equipment, and data center equipment residing in these facilities, his roles include the design, construction, and facility-related technology research as it relates to data center architecture. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Well, thank you very much.
You've got an impressive resume, sir. You've been a busy guy.
Well, hopefully I've done a good job. It's one thing to be a busy guy, one thing to do a good job, I think.
I tend to agree. And we bumped into each other at the TechEd Europe in Barcelona a few months back. And it was one of those conversations where I thought, you know what? We need to make this a show. Because working on the data centers for Microsoft, that's serious business. You guys have got a lot of gear.
We certainly do. I think about the fact I've been here with the company now for about 3.5 years, and in that 3.5 years, our total footprint has grown cumulatively over 100% every year, and it's on track to continue to do that for as far as I can see. So it's definitely a pretty substantial challenge to try to, you know, one, manage that kind of growth, and two, manage that kind of growth really efficiently.
And plus, with all the movements that are going on in the data center industry right now, if I remember correctly, I hear you're building a new data center close to a hydroelectric dam.
Actually, we've completed the first one. We're about to complete our second one.
Holy cow.
So I didn't think Barcelona was that long ago, but we move at a pretty quick pace here at Microsoft. Yeah, we announced, when was it? It was December of 2005. And our first facility, our first really owned and built data center facility in Quincy, Washington. The Quincy, Washington location has since gone live, and we are now wrapping up the second construction effort in Quincy, Washington, as well as other fairly public announcements in San Antonio, in Dublin, and Chicago. So we've been quite busy since the last time we've met.
No kidding. So what's the real advantage to being up close to the hydroelectric facility like that?
Well, there's a couple of things. One of the big challenges the industry is going to face is that of increased scrutiny and regulation around green legislation. You know, how green are you? How efficient are you as a company in using the energy resources that you consume? And a large burden of that, or a big portion of that burden, is going to fall to individual IT departments everywhere to start thinking about how efficient and how green am I actually running my data center? How green am I really running my IT environments? And as a result of that, as we started thinking sort of long-term in our site selection process, and I'll be happy to cover that more as well, but in our site selection process, we really started thinking about, you know, what should we be thinking about in terms of sustainability or green aspect to building our data centers? And one of the things that we've discovered is that, you know, power generated from hydroelectric dams has a zero carbon footprint. You could probably argue that the rivers themselves give off some set of carbon emissions, but by and large, the carbon emissions from a river being dammed up is pretty minimal. And so, you know, to build a data center, you know, a couple of power poles away from the dam allows you to ensure two things. One, that you're a completely carbon neutral facility in terms of your overall consumption and use of power, but it's also sort of a nice green thing to do in terms of that, you know, you're drawing your energy from a renewable energy source.
Now, doesn't being close to the dam mean you're also consuming power that might have otherwise been wasted transmitting it over longer distances?
That's true. There's a certain level of inefficiency, and every time you try to generate electricity and send it long ways down the poles, there's always a transformational loss at every station. So being closer to the generation point definitely has its advantages in that you don't have those significant losses up front.
So did you guys get a deal on your power?
No, we didn't get a specific deal on the power in Grant County. The rates there, local rates are actually, you know, very favorable as they were. So we didn't have to do much in terms of negotiating power rates or anything like that. It, you know, the base fact of the matter is a lot of those dams were sort of coming off of depreciation, if I could use the business term. They were built 50 years ago. And as the depreciation of those dams come off, the cost advantage to using power from them is pretty significant. It's a fact that the local governments and the local utilities definitely saw as an advantage to attract companies like ourselves.
Now, and I got to imagine the land around the dam was pretty cheap. It's not exactly high end commercial property up there.
That's correct. Yeah. You know, you're talking about an area that's mostly rural, and as a matter of course, you know, land costs out there aren't necessarily significant. You know, compared to the Seattle, Washington, or Redmond area, it's definitely not even
no
in the
kidding.
Same ballpark.
But then I guess the expensive part has got to be you had to pull all your own bandwidth to your building.
Well, yes and no. One of the interesting things about our site selection process, I began to talk about this a little bit earlier. We have mapped out the world in about 35 different factors in terms of where we want to site select our data centers. And those factors are everything from, what's the makeup and generation of the power in that area? How much power capacity is there? What's the cost of power? What's the availability of IT personnel in that area? One of the things that you can imagine is sort of one of the key drivers of our site selection process is availability of fiber and bandwidth and proximity to peering locations.
Right, right.
And one of the interesting things about Quincy, Washington, and Grant County in general, was the fact that they had invested some significant money in infrastructure to kind of build out a fairly substantial fiber optic network there, and as well as being sort of the crossover point cross continental fiber connectivity coming into the Seattle area. So there was actually quite a bit of fiber optic connectivity that we could take advantage of in Quincy, Washington, more so than you would think.
So essentially pipelines that were traveling through the county to connect to other endpoints further on, you were able to tap into those and take advantage of them.
That's correct, yes.
And I guess the labor market's an interesting challenge when you're talking about largely a rural area.
It is. One of the nice things about this area is there's Big Bend Community College. It's a community college in the area that is driving towards more technical degrees. And so by having us come in there, we were able to work very closely with the community college to try to figure out what's the right set of courses and curriculum to make sure that that the folks coming out of that institution have an opportunity to work in our Quincy, in our Quincy facility. And I would say today, a vast majority of the people that work in our facilities in that area are all based out of Quincy or out of that area.
Yeah, curious, what kind of an impact does this have on a typical community from a people standpoint?
Well, I'm not quite sure. From a people standpoint, there's a couple of different ways to kind of interpret people standpoint. From a jobs perspective, the data center itself had upwards of about 400 electricians on the job at its peak. So there was a lot of construction activity. The building itself was pretty substantial, measured in the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of construction. That obviously parlayed its way into sort of construction-related jobs. And then moving on to sort of the long-term ongoing facility support, there's about 50 permanent jobs that the data center itself creates in that area. And then more so when you think about sort of the impacts of the data center in that area, what does it mean to have a data center? Is it good or bad? And I saw an interesting report out of the local Grant County paper there that said that as a result of our data center going in, everyone's property tax bill would be reduced by $100 to $200 just by having us there. So I think, the impact to the local community can be significant by putting these types of high technology buildings in place in a particular area.
Well, you certainly have to be good at your job to build these massive data centers and to do it multiple times. What are some of the things that you've learned over the last several years that maybe IT pros and medium and smaller and even a little bit larger businesses might be able to take advantage of?
Well, one of the challenges that I had when I first came on board here at Microsoft was to bring Moore's Law to the data center. If you think about anybody's data center across the industry, Moore's Law has had dramatic impact on everything from your processors, to your memory, to your motherboards, to just about every aspect of everything that lives inside the data center. But very, very little advancements in driving towards efficiency gains have actually been targeted at the data center itself. And so one of the key charters I have in my organization is let's bring Moore's Law to the data center. Let's bring Moore's Law to the rooms that all of this gear, which has such hyper growth associated with it, let's make sure that those rooms can keep up specifically in terms of efficiency. Because when you think about running data centers, as an industry executive or as an industry insider, you really want to think about how do I ensure that more work is being done per watt than just watched in support of that work, right? There's an industry metric known as a PUE, power utilization effectiveness, or power utilization efficiency. I've heard it used both ways, but it's a way of measuring the overall efficiency and utilization of your data centers. How much power is going in for critical work, either serving bits out to the internet or performing some internal IT function, and how much of it is sort of in support of that, the cooling, the electrical distribution systems. And you really want to try to optimize your data center to be as efficient as you possibly can. We talked a little bit earlier about the coming green legislation and sort of regulatory oversight that's going to be coming to this space. The IT pros today are going to have to start thinking about that efficiency metric, because once a data center is sited and once you have a data center in an existing area, your overall sort of carbon emission footprint, for example, how much carbon emissions does your data center give off? It's a question, I think, if you posed it to most IT professionals today, they wouldn't necessarily have a good answer, if they have any answer at all. But it's a question that's going to be coming their way. And in situations where your data centers are already in place and they've been in operation for a long time, there's not much you can do to drive the sort of your carbon emissions other than driving for efficiency in the data center. So you're using less power to do the same amount of work. It's going to be a key driving component. And I can tell you that in our own facilities design and in our own construction, optimizing for efficiency, whether that be efficiency in power or efficiency in workflow, are key and critical elements to how we design and build our data centers today. If you were to walk into a data center today at Microsoft, you'd see some interesting things, even from a workflow perspective. So I like to say that the days of the handcrafted master artisan server builder are long dead at Microsoft. so, you know, the days where the box would come on the loading dock and they'd open up the box and they might install some memory or some hard drives or what have you, and then lovingly install it into a rack, dress out the network cables, and, you know, potentially load the operating system on the machine itself through CDs or through some other means. That has long since died and moved on. We've moved from a single sort of a work unit, from a server to a rack of servers to whole rooms of servers at a time to really entire data centers at a time. So you could go to a facility today and you'd see the truck backing up with, and when the doors of the truck roll up, you see that the racks are already pre-populated with servers. They're on wheels. We roll them into the data center. The data center itself has been designed for, moving gear in and out. We roll the racks of equipment onto the data center floor. We plug in the power. We plug in the network and then the machines self-image themselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the driving towards automation has really been a key for us at Microsoft to really figure out how do we streamline this process and turn sort of IT, drive really automation in sort of these standard IT practices. And the scale is pretty amazing when you think about the fact that, you know, we deliver, you know, tens of thousands of brand new systems every month. It's a pretty substantial scale challenge for us as a company.
So we hear the Steve Ballmers of the world talking about the virtualization technologies utilizing our servers more efficiently. Has that actually started happening at the data center level inside of Microsoft?
Oh, you can bet that it has. we're talking about significant amounts of spend for us as a company, both in terms of the initial server purchases, and then if you think about the ongoing power draw over the life of that server, driving efficiency and how you utilize that resource is really key. And you think about the scale challenge. If you really need to architecture applications in such a way that they really work very closely with virtualization strategies. And it's important to know that, you know, virtualization strategies mean different things to different people. Sort of the stock out of the box virtualization stuff is really good at CPU intensive applications, but it's, you know, maybe there's some challenges in storage or memory bound applications or network bound applications. So you really have to address the virtualization challenge very, very holistically, sort of at an entire ecosystem layer. But once you can kind of get your hands around that and your handles around how to address that with virtualization, it's a pretty key driver for us internally in terms of how we're approaching the market space, both in terms of virtualization and geodiversity, being able to run an application in multiple data centers, but having them rely on each other. Those are key components to our strategy as a business.
You know, virtualization is one way that one team of mine used to try to solve the classic perennial problem of too much heat. We had plenty of power. We actually had plenty of floor space, but heat became, it seems to be the repeat itself data center issue. Is virtualization one of the ways, have you combated it in that way? And I think a lot of the people that are listening have probably had to deal with that. The room's just getting too hot. I can't add anything else to it. What other ways can they combat that problem?
From a cooling perspective?
Right. Yeah.
From a cooling perspective, virtualization is going to drive some benefits there. And I think, as you had mentioned, you know, as I think about, you know, what are the benefits virtualization can drive there? You know, if I can get, if the base draw of my machine, let's say, is 100 watts or 160 watts, or let's say it's 200 watts. If it's 200 watts, but at fully loaded, it's 400 watts, and I've been able to virtualize six machines or been able to take six machines, you know, six physical machines and collapse it down into that one, you obviously have a pretty substantial reduction in total overall power being utilized for those for those facilities, and as a result, a net reduction in heat in those, facilities as well. One of the challenges, though, I just want to bring this up, is, you know, data center managers today are dealing with an ever-increasing density per rack. You know, if I go back 3 or 4 years ago, you're looking at 3 kilowatt or 4 kilowatts of power per rack. I think now you're seeing, you know, per rack densities somewhere in the 8 to 12 range with you know, some of them at the 16 to 32 kilowatt range. So, and it's a function of a couple of things. Sometimes it's a function of space that you have to be able to work in. You know, a data center in downtown Manhattan is very expensive to go get more space. But, you know, just in general, the amount of power per rack has been increasing, you know, and that's been causing very substantial challenges on the cooling side in data centers to try to figure out, how do I cool that? How do I architect my data centers in such a way that, you know, that I can, you know, if I have the ability to build them brand new, you know, how do I architect my data center so I have the most flexibility on the cooling side to make sure that I keep it cool? You know, a lot of strategies that I see today with sort of this ever increasing density in the rack is people are moving farther and farther out. The space between rack rows is getting, you know, definitely much farther out. Of space isn't a constraint for you, but it's a challenge. It's a pretty significant challenge for the industry as a whole.
I wonder if, you know, there's a double battle going on here. It's existing infrastructure, existing racks, and existing cooling and existing power allocations are getting stressed because we're increasing the power and computing density per rack. And then you're putting more demands on that entire infrastructure. But then the other side of this is looking at new gear. I get a sense that we're trying to go to cooler running gear. I think the perfect data center is one that has no active cooling at all. I just don't know if we can actually run that cool yet.
Well, I can tell you that, so that's spot on the truth. There's 2 points I'll make to that. One is sort of backwards looking and the other is forward looking. You know, if you look at most of the data center inventory across the U.S. and abroad today, it was designed between 80 watts a square foot and about 100, maybe 110 watts a square foot, somewhere in that range. And if you think about the density challenge that we're faced with today, we're easily drawing, you know, racks sort of in the 200, 225, you know, sometimes up to 300 watts a square foot range. And so that's putting unbelievable pressures on sort of this existing data center inventory. And there's a demand for that inventory as well. As you can imagine, you know, data center inventory across the globe is pretty sparse. And as a result of that, the rates for that space is getting, you know, higher and higher as well. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure to, you know, how do we optimize for that? And there's a couple of key things sort of looking forward that I think kind of play into this. One, we've announced our data center in Dublin, Ireland. And one of the things that facility takes advantage of is something called airside economization, where we will not cool that facility with sort of internal systems. We will make use of the outside air and use that outside air to cool that facility continually. I think going back over the last 50 years worth of data, you know, we've saw that, you know, on sort of the worst year, you're looking at 8 hours that you'd have to actually run your data center on some sort of other cooling solution. So, you know, it's an interesting statement that you had made saying, can we even run it that way? I think the answer is yes, we can run it that way. And a lot of the developments that Intel and AMD are driving towards from the chip perspective are reducing the overall power per core, which is having a pretty significant impact as well in the data center. You know, I've mentioned that we're growing 100% year over year. You know, we have definitely seen impacts of the chip manufacturers reducing the power per core requirements as a result of that. So I think, you know, as an industry, we're moving in the right direction on a lot of these things. But, you know, there's still a long way to go.
My first thought there was, I think this is more of a statement of how cold it is in Ireland.
It was in talking with the Prime Minister of Ireland. He said, "I think it's the first time he's ever heard of the climate in Ireland ever being described as something positive."
Yeah, beneficial to the process. Right. I definitely agree with you that we're getting cooler cores these days. But I've also seen interesting movement in the 2.5-inch drive space as enterprise class drives for SANs, because they also run cooler, consume less power.
I think the overall, the drive for efficiency and the drive for, you know, reducing the amount of power in the data center is pretty key. It really, at the end of the day, it's all about efficiency in my mind, right? It's, if I can run the same amount of storage or if I can run the same amount of compute cycles and a smaller power footprint, ultimately my bill will be less. I pay a fairly hefty power bill every month. I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's a bit of electricity there.
And so, you know, very small gains in efficiency, you know, over time have a pretty big impact. You know, it's a sort of a, the law of large numbers applies. So it's definitely something worth doing for everyone across the industry, whether you're a small IT professional or, you know, managing, cloud compute services that we're building out. It's definitely something you want to focus on and make sure you're doing the most efficient job you possibly can.
And a lot of the folks that I've talked to that are running existing data centers are running out of electricity, especially in the urban centers. There's simply no more power to be bought in that given building. And so they have entire empty racks because the rack density's gotten so high. In some ways, I think you've got it easy because you're doubling up every year. You're always building new gear rather than constantly tuning and tweaking your existing infrastructure. What's happening to the quote old data centers for Microsoft?
Well, it's the same. We're going through the same processes that any standard IT professional would in their own data centers. You know, we have a stable of data centers that were built prior to sort of this growth period that we're managing to, and you know. When you build a data center, whether it's now or 15 years ago, that building is there, and the design requirements that you built into that building are set forward, you know, at that point in time, and you live with those for, you know, until that building is depreciated off the books or, you know, forever. And, you know, we have those same challenges. We are trying to optimize and drive efficiency in our data centers with an ever-increasing, you know, power draw per rack. And, you know, as a result, we're doing all the things that everyone else is doing. We're widening the rows between our rack rows. We're redistributing some power elements or some cooling elements in our facilities to make sure that we get the most efficient design kind of given the changing technology requirements. Those are things that are all happening right now. And the drive for efficiency in our facilities is pretty significant, especially in our older facilities. All of our data center managers, the folks who are responsible for managing our buildings and managing our facilities, have as one of their commitments, one of the key things that they need to deliver every year, how they are measured is all around the efficiency of the building. Are you using your power efficiently? Are you using all of the power? Are you stranding any power? The worst sort of cardinal sin that any data center manager can do in our world is if you're stranding power, you're not doing the right thing for the business. If you think about a data center itself, about 80 to 85% of the total capital costs in a data center, both on construction and in sort of an ongoing perspective, are all geared towards the electrical and mechanical build-out. If you're wasting power, you're wasting 85%, you're wasting some percentage of that 85% of that building. To some degree, concrete is cheap, so space is a little bit easier to waste than power or being able to effectively cool the data center. So we measure all of our data center managers on their overall efficiency and whether or not they're utilizing every last watt that they possibly can.
I love this concept of measuring efficiency in transactions per watt. That's a pretty deep down measurement, getting right into how does an application work and how much power did it take to get that given piece of work done. I just haven't seen much in the way of integration from the application level going all the way down to these sort of core power consumption aspects of a machine. I've yet to see a really great feed where a computer is telling its operating system, here's how much power I'm consuming right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting, at Microsoft, we measure everything against power. How we normalize, how we look at financially these facilities, everything is normalized against power. And with the amount of, focus that we place on power in our facilities in terms of how we run them, what the operational payback is, everything is all around power. We don't look at square footage of data centers. We look at what's the total power footprint of that data center. When we normalize and compare data centers to one another, it's all over the cost per kilowatt per month. You know, that's the metric we use, is the cost per kilowatt per month to make sure that, how much what's our cost to deliver 1 kilowatt of capacity per month? That's kind of how our base metrics work. So when you start pushing and start measuring everything based off of power, eventually the application developers begin to take note. And I can tell you there's been, you know, many instances internally where our developers, especially on our online, you know, on our online and live products, are looking at things and they say, boy, you know, this SQL query tends to, you know, draw more power than this other SQL query, and one might be a little less efficient, but it saves us more power. You know, ultimately saves us more power draw. So we're starting to see sort of the very beginning of our developers starting to think about what the overall power impact of their applications are, and we're using sort of internal billing mechanisms to really highlight that power is a significant factor that everyone needs to be aware of.
Yeah, if the developers are thinking about it, then clearly it's an important factor for Microsoft.
Yes,
I just suddenly get the sense of a data center operator wanting to stay away from certain apps because he knows how power inefficient they are, and it's going to mess with his performance metrics. Like, that's an interesting pressure to exert on someone.
It is, but it's really a pressure that we're applying on ourselves as a company, not so much. You know, at the end of the day, I can't go in and say, you know, this particular application or that particular application is more or less power hungry. You know, there's a natural incentive, you know, within the way we've architected our infrastructure for people to drive towards more efficiency. You know, the data center managers are measured by, if you have, you know, 300 kilowatts of extra space, let's figure out a way how to fill that 300 kilowatts of extra space.
Yeah.
And use it as effectively and as efficiently as we possibly can.
So it strikes me that this has largely been a set of evolutionary tactics you've used to improve data centers as a whole. Is there a jumping point coming? Is there something on the horizon here that is going to totally revolutionize the way data centers are built?
I think this is a revolution through evolution in many respects, but there are many things that are kind of sort of coming on sort of on the horizon. You know, there's only so much a data center manager can do to drive efficiency. You know, we really need to drive awareness into the manufacturers of the switchgear, of the cooling systems, of all these things, to really start putting more of a focus on efficiency, perhaps more than they've done so before. So we're working together with, you know, many large manufacturers, sort of large, you know, data center, heavy infrastructure, heavy industry types of players to figure out how do we drive this sort of to the next step. But, you know, in general, by focusing on driving efficiency, you find all sorts of areas to win, low-hanging fruit that you can continue to drive data center design moving forward. I would argue that, you know, a lot of the work that's happened to date is kind of happening in interesting little silos. You know, the cloud services companies that are kind of dealing at one scale are driving significant innovation in their space. You've got groups like the Uptime Institute and Green Grid and others who are really driving towards more industry-wide awareness towards efficiency gains. But, you know, there's a couple of challenging factors when you think about data centers. You know, when you go and buy a data center, when you go and build a data center, every data center is a little different. There's an ecosystem there that you need to, and every ecosystem is different. You might have Liebert cooling mechanisms, or you might have another brand, or, you know, you might have, you know, this electrical distribution gear or that electrical distribution gear. So, and you may have a mix of every data center manager and every data center professional is going to have a mix and match of sort of a big heterogeneous environment. And how do you optimize that particular environment is something that's, you know, going to take time and focus on. And, you know, not everyone has the ability to go build greenfield data centers, you know, every couple of months. So,
right.
You know, it's a challenge as an industry, but the challenge is evolutionary in that once someone figures out, oh, here's the right way to really think about this problem in my particular ecosystem, it might be leveraged elsewhere as well. And you have to take the complexity in of, you know, these, you know, thousands and thousands of different heterogeneous environments, and what are sort of the best practices. In fact, Steve Ballmer at CBIT a couple of weeks ago just announced sort of the data center best practices, things to think about for best practices in data centers. It's a white paper that my team, in partnership with some others here internally, put together for just to kind of start driving some of that thought that thought leadership in the space, so that people can start thinking, boy, am I really thinking about this problem space in the right way, or at least in a different way than I am today.
Michael Manos, you've blown our minds, I think. It's been a half hour. We're already out of time, and I have a pile of questions sitting on the tip of my tongue. I'd like to keep going. I think we're just going to have to bring you back.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, Michael.
All right. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.